Blog Talk Radio.
This is our common ground. Tonight, with joyous spirit and grateful hearts, we welcome Jamie and Gladys Scott to our common ground. It's a homecoming celebration. Remembers and recalls the drum major for justice. We honor Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King on his birthday. Right here, right now, our common ground. Stay tuned.
And thank you for being with us here at Our Common Ground. We welcome all of you on this winter King Day. Lots of things to do. We're going to be quite busy here at Our Common Ground. With me, I have my co-host, Alpho. Good evening, Alpho. Thank you for being at the mic.
Well, good evening, Dennis, and how are you this evening?
I am good. I am very good. We're going to be quite busy tonight, and we want to keep it moving right along. You had some great talk programming this afternoon. For those of you who are in this audience, if you do not know, the best of political pushback is at the Alpho Show, 3 p.m. on Blog Talk Radio every Saturday afternoon. And then Alpho Reloads, and I know that's a very loaded word around here lately, but he reloads at TruthWorks Network and at 4 o'clock following the Alpho Show. Tonight we're going to be doing something very, very special, something that just warms my heart, and I know Alpho shares the same with me. We're going to be welcoming to our common ground Jamie and Gladys Scott, two sisters who have spent 16 years in a Mississippi prison for a crime where they maintained their innocence and did not commit, and for the kinds of injustices that went behind their sentences. We're going to be talking with them about their experiences and talking about their responses to the release. And for those of you in our audience who worked so very hard to make sure that this justice, this small justice that we got, for their release on an indefinite suspension, and we're going to be talking about the terms of their release. Also, in the last hour of our show tonight, we're going to be celebrating the birthday of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. We certainly could not go by a January 15th without doing that, and I'm honored to have my guests, Jamie and Gladys Scott, and also honored to be at the microphone on King Day.
Lord,
so we thank you for being with us. What? Hello?
I heard somebody in the background. Wasn't me.
Okay. We want to thank all of you for being with us and listening to Our Common Ground tonight. And for those of you who would like, we have a quite robust chat room at Blog Talk Radio. You can come to blogtalkradio.com/OCG and join in the discussion as we talked with Jamie and Gladys Scott. You know, Alpha, one of the things, there are two things about this release that just privately in my head that I'm not doing. One is using the photograph that we used all through the years to bring our protest about the Scott sisters. That photograph I will never use again. And the other is to call them the Scott sisters. There is Jamie and there is Gladys, and we are just so honored to be able to have them, and we are hoping that their mother will join us as well. But we thank you for being with us, and we're going to begin to our programming for tonight, and thank you very much for being with us.
All we say to America is be true to what you said on paper. Somewhere I read that the greatness of America is the right to protest far right.
Tonight, our common ground remembers and recalls the drum major for justice. We honor Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King on his birthday.
And we will do that in our second hour. Joining us at Our Common Ground is Sister Marpessa, and I think she's on the line. Are you there, Sister Marpessa?
Yes, I am. Peace to everyone.
How you doing, Marpessa?
You,
much
my
love
sister,
for everyone gathered together to welcome
Uhuru.
Scott's sister home.
Yes, and we could not at Our Common Ground welcome them without having you with us. For those of you who do not know, Sister Marpessa is a long-term time activist. On every program that we have done about the Scott Sisters, she has been their spokesperson to help our listening audience through the story of the Scott Sisters. But more than that, Sister Marpessa, along with some other courageous women, got together around the Scott Sisters case and formed an organization. And we called it the Gray-Haired Witnesses for Justice. And for those of you who do not know who the Gray-Haired Witnesses for Justice, just take a listen for a minute. Sister Marpessa, thank you so much for joining us.
We who believe in freedom cannot rest until it comes. We who believe in freedom cannot rest. We who believe in freedom cannot rest until it comes. Until the killing of black men, black mother's son, is as important as the killing of white men, white mother's son. We who believe in freedom cannot most is that I had a chance to work with people, passing on to others that which was passed on to me.
And Sister Marpessa, Gray-Haired
yes,
Witnesses
for
Justice.
Thank you for playing my theme song.
I know
that,
that's your song.
That
could I not have you
song.
On these airwaves?
I appreciate you saying that. That really speaks to not just me, but to all the gray-haired witnesses who said, look, we're going to step out in the spirit of our righteous zero ancestors who came before us and remind our young brothers and sisters that we are not made to sit and take it, that we know how to make struggle, that the struggles that came before us are the reason that we are here to this day, and that we have to make sure that we let people know that even with our gray hair, we need to use that to teach those lessons that so many of us learned during our organizing in the past. And that's why we've made a stand to show all others that if we can do it, anyone can get out there and stand up for righteousness, particularly when it's our sisters who are filling these prisons up in record numbers. We have to reclaim our sisters, and it's going to take the elder sisters to make the stand and lead the charge.
You're absolutely right, and I was just so honored to work with you to be able to do just that, that at some point you have to take a stand. You have to say that this kind of injustice cannot stand. It simply cannot stand. And
yeah,
that is
shocking. You know, we couldn't even get people to believe that they had double life sentences each. People were correcting us, telling us, oh, it couldn't have been double life. It had to be life. Well, wait a minute. Somebody had to have been murdered, but no. It was double life sentences each. And as the people were shocked, we tried to get people to report on this because it had to be sensationalist enough that the black media certainly would want to cover it, you know, and they ignored us. They did nothing but, you know, just not respond to us. We made calls. Sister BJ, I, Sister Terry Halcutt, Sister Dez, Sister Jamia Shepherd, we had so many people that work with us and that were calling and emailing and writing and imploring media to cover the case of the Scott sisters, and they would not until the very end. And, well, thank goodness they came around when they did, but it sure would have been nice to have gotten Jamie out of prison before she got so very ill. And that's something that we're going to have to bear in mind when we're contributing to media, that we make demands of media that they respond to our needs in a timely fashion, especially when we make it plain it's a life and death situation.
You're absolutely right about that, Sister Marpessa. And one of the things that I hope that we accomplished as gray-haired witnesses was that we teach people to look beyond what they're being told.
That's right.
To look beyond what they believe is possible. And in looking beyond, in looking at all of that, then you can really understand what is possible that we can do to change the things that confront our community, that threatens our peace and our freedom and our privileges of humanity.
That's right.
So
you know that the prison industrial complex is designed for our people. You know, we know what it's all about. Enough of us know, enough of us talk about it every day, but we continue to tell each other that there's nothing we can do about it. It is what a lot of people like to say. But it ain't got to be. There is plenty of struggle. We know, and we uphold people with our posters, with our lingo, with our slogans. We uphold people that have made struggle in the past. We can still make struggle and put a dent in this system and let the Scott sisters stand as an example to all who want to say, you can't make struggle on the Internet. You can't organize by doing emails and phone calls and protests. Answer them back and say, yes, we can, and we did it. We did it with the Scott sisters, and we can continue to do it every day. We can each do something. You may not want to stand out there with a picket sign. You may not want to, you know, go hardcore revolutionary. You may not want to be involved in any more prisoner campaigns in your life, but you may want to instead work with some young brothers and sisters in your neighborhood. You may want to be able to help feed somebody that needs a coat and needs a hot meal. You might want to take care of people that live right in your neighborhood, your area. There's always something that somebody can do to make real change. You can do it.
You're right. And you know, we're facing a situation, Sister Marpessa, where people really want to just turn their blind eye to injustice and to all of the things that plague our community, because many of them are just very, very basic. They're basic in so many ways, and we seem to want to, it's okay. to accept them.
That's right.
And, you know, and we've got to stop being an accepted person. Now, Sister Marpessa, I want to want you to tell me a little about your involvement from the very beginning in the Scott Sisters case.
Well, I first saw a posting about the Scott Sisters from Nancy Lockhart in the, on asadasecor.org around 2008. And I contacted Nancy and started working with her, brainstorming. We, you know, had ideas. We tried several different campaigns. We had people around the internet suggesting campaigns, and I think we tried to run with practically every suggestion that came our way to try to make sure that we kept up with what was going on with the Scott Sisters to try to get people to get involved in the campaign to free them. And it came to a point where we first got word that Jamie had been so very seriously ill in January of 2010. And that's when everything really started escalating and trying to get support because Gladys recognized the seriousness of it and at that time had stated she wanted to give a kidney to her daughter, to her sister. And with each passing week, it seemed as though Jamie was in some type of crisis that the prison was trying to cover up. And we fought, and under the leadership of Mrs. Evelyn Rasko, who definitely needs to be listed among the freedom-fighting sheroes anytime in the future. That sister made certain that everybody on the sound of her voice knew that she was not going to take no for an answer when it came to getting her daughters out of jail. And we worked together. We developed a website, her blog spot that she has now, and that is Mrs. Rasko's own blog spot that we formed in 2009 and that I maintain for her. And it will hopefully soon be used by the Scott Sisters themselves. And that effort helped to get the word out all over the world. You know, it was a continuous thing. Well, through Facebook, through blog talk radio shows such as yourself, through eventually and a long time, you know, coming, the black media, we were finally able to get enough attention paid that Jamie and Gladys were able to get released from prison, and thank God. And I know when you called me that day and told me, just thinking of it chokes me up, that did I hear that Jamie and Gladys had got were going to be released from prison? It just made every bit of it just melt away because there is a victory to be had in every situation. And if we keep our eyes trained on that light at the end of the tunnel, then the work don't seem that hard, you know. It makes it all worth it, and I just give thanks for everyone that worked together to make it happen.
Well, I am real grateful, and I am hoping, you know, as a gray-haired witness, that we have learned that we through this experience have learned two things: that we have the power to fight the power.
That's right.
I'm thinking of our June 21st fast in Washington, D.C.,
mm-hmm.
Where we gathered at the Department of Justice, and then we went to and held a rally across the street from the White House. We met
mm-hmm.
with the White House, and we made it in no uncertain terms.
That's
that
right.
We would not, after having struggled and come this far, stand and allow this kind of injustice to stand. And I think that as a people, we have to, you know, the term, you know, I like to use the term Sankofa. We have to reach back and find ourselves that it's still, that the spirit of struggle is still within us. We must maintain it at all times because nobody's giving away anything in this country, especially now.
That's right.
What was riveting, and you're absolutely right, is the faithfulness of a mother over a 16-year period
mm-hmm.
who essentially had never been involved in any kind of protests in any way in which trying to move the government or figure out who should get elected and who should be a candidate. But it was the love of this mother where she gathered the strength of all of our ancestors.
That's right.
And in the and you know, and I think about it in terms of it is in the it is part of the spirit stream of African American women to have faith, to stick with and hold on to truth in order to struggle. Because I look at Ms. Rasko and I see that she is a model for all of the mothers who are tonight.
That's right. And think of her with all of her grandchildren. She had one daughter that passed. She had to raise her child. She had Jamie and Gladys' children, plus grandchildren. And she sit there on that computer typing. Now, just even imagine her being on a computer. I mean, that's
right.
Just, we would imagine a lot of us, a lot of our moms being on a computer, you know, and not only being on a computer, but joining tons of websites, posting tons of messages, and making certain that everybody knows what's going on in her family. And keeping
right.
up with every time something happened with Jamie or Gladys in that prison, letting everybody know, and also to Jamie and Gladys for not being intimidated by the system in that prison that, you know, tried to treat them poorly because of their mother and our advocacy. Because most certainly
mm-hmm.
they were treated poorly by the prison and some inmates as well because of that. And, you know, for Mrs. Rasko to have to worry about that on top of everything. You know, but
mm-hmm,
know that
mm-hmm.
Jamie and Gladys were saying, keep on, keep on. We can take it. Just don't stop, Mom. And many a teary-eyed phone call in the middle of the night with Mrs. Rasko when things were being told to her were going on with Jamie and Gladys and how we kept on pushing and kept on pushing through. And she was a tremendous, tremendously powerful, powerful sister.
Yeah, I remember... going to bed many nights worried about how she was doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because we went through, especially last January through March, went through one, every other day there was a crisis with Jamie's health.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and let's talk about our responsibility in terms of how our prisons are managed.
Yes.
Christopher Epps, who is the Director of Corrections for the Department of Corrections for Mississippi, and Gloria Perry, who is the Director of Medical Services for the Department of Corrections in Mississippi, they're both African Americans. Sister Mapesa is a gray-haired witness. As a person that's been doing talk radio forever, since the 80s, I cannot understand how people who have benefited from people who struggled and died can behave in the kind of egregious way in which those two people and I'll bet you a dime to a dollar every one of them has gotten a privilege to be where they are because of what other people did.
That's right. That's right. And we might as well let it be known right now today that they should not rest easy because we still are not letting them off the hook. We know that those conditions of mold and all the other toxins that exist in that prison still exist. We know that there are other people in that prison that are still suffering, and we know that nothing but complete sellouts are two traitors are running that prison and being so terribly lackadaisical to what goes on within there. And we're going to continue, once we get situated, we're going to continue pressing that prison to do what they know is right. Regarding, and with the help of Gladys and Jamie, to know exactly what needs to be pressed on to let them know that we're not gonna let up on them. There's no reason for them to sit up there and get comfortable now.
That's right. That's right. Well, I've had a number of discussions with both Gladys and Jamie, and they have not forgotten those who have they left behind.
Mm-hmm.
And we're hoping that we can assist in addressing the issue. I mean, there should be no prison with the kinds of conditions that exist in the state of Mississippi.
That's
in
right.
America.
That's right.
Guantanamo Bay is cleaner than the prisons we put American citizens in Mississippi. It's healthier. And at some point, we, American citizens, we've got to take responsibility for what we allow our government and how we allow our government to manage.
That's right.
I mean, Marpessa, we're waiting for Jamie and Gladys Scott to join us. You're listening to Our Common Ground, and I'm talking with Sister Marpessa, who is one of the founders of Gray-Haired Witnesses, an organization founded by a group of African-American women who stood in support of the Scott sisters, who struggled and worked tirelessly to ensure that America knew about the Scott sisters, because that was the only way that we were going to ever get any impetus for someone to take a look at the injustice under which they were incarcerated.
That's right. And we had so many young people to become a part of the struggle, people that were brilliant in the way that they used media and the way that they expressed themselves creatively. I also wanted to shout out Sister Fatira Aziz and Sister Shakira, Sister Shakira Hameen, and, you know, Brother Slangston Hughes and Sister Spoken Word, many people, Sister Khadija Coleman, many people that came to the Gray Air Witnesses rally were people that were hearing about the Scott sisters for the first time. And they had no problem coming. They weren't feeling as though, you know, it wasn't worthwhile for them to take some time off and come through and show support. A lot of times we find people that have been around the longest are the ones that you can depend on the shortest. And that's why we got to make sure that we're reaching out to the youth. Now, we can't just focus on preaching to the choir. We have to get that information in to the youth, and whether it's on Facebook, however we can do it, whatever our outreach is, we have to make sure that we're not telling young people, here, you have to lockstep with what we're saying. We want you to hear what we're saying, but we also want to hear what they're saying. And some of what they came up with was dynamic, and they went a long, long way towards getting the word out about the Scott sisters. So please, everyone is listening, make certain that whenever you're involved with a situation where you're trying to get involvement, make sure you do that outreach to the youth and you focus on them in a mighty big way.
While we're waiting, I do want to tell 845-734 and 623 that we are going to have to dump them off of our call board because they have because we can't, the Scott sisters can't get through to us if we don't. So I'm going to have to, let's talk, 845, are you just holding to listen to the show on your mobile device?
Janice, this is Denise Bowles. I'm listening to the show here at home.
Okay, is it possible? I'm going to have to hang up. Because the board is full and the Scott sisters can't get through.
Oh, sure.
Do you have another way of listening to the show?
Yeah, no problem.
Okay, thank you. That was Denise Bowles, who's going to be joining us on TruthWorks Network. 734, thank you for being with us here at Our Common Ground. Are you listening to the show? Or are you waiting to be on the air? Hello? 734. I don't know what that one's about. We want to thank everyone for being with us. Sister Marpessa is with us, and we're talking about the work of gray-haired witnesses. We've got 623 who just popped up. 623, are you listening or are you waiting to be on the air?
Father, she's talking to me.
Pardon me? Six, two, three. Okay. I don't know what that was about either. But we welcome you once again here at Our Common Ground. We're going to be talking. We're going to be... Actually, this is a celebration, Marpessa and Alpha. I cannot tell you as much as I have tried to get used to it since we have had this 2 weeks, I just am still trying to get used to thinking that the Scott sisters are at home.
I remember when I first saw them on TV, and I thought to myself, I know how thrilled we were just to see them when they were on, when Jane Velez Mitchell had them on there for like half a second when she was talking about some other case. And here it was, you couldn't turn a channel where they weren't on. It just felt so surreal and just such a proud moment. Of course, we don't ever believe that these courts are going to act in the best interest of our people, because look at what kind of situation was put on them in order to get out of prison, you know, and the kind of stipulations that have been put upon them. You know, in fact, the next step in this struggle is going to be getting them completely pardoned and getting them, you know, completely able to prove their innocence once and for all, to get this expunged from their record, to just completely make it clear and make it known that this was a wrongful conviction, you know, and to open up the doors for all types of other things for them, and to let people know also that, you know, the sisters and the family are in a great deal of need. You know, they came home with nothing. There is needs for donations, which can be sent to them at their mother's P.O. box address, and also there is clothing needs for the sisters, and I recently saw their sizes and made note of it. Gladys wears 16 to 18. Jamie wears 26 to 28. And whether or not they think to mention it, I just want to make sure that gets out there. Also, the website is freethescottsisters.blogspot.com. I'll type in Miss Rasko's P.O. box address so that everybody can
see it.
Thank
you, Marpessa.
Yes.
The other thing is, we're going to be putting something on our site about where you can make donations, and we suggest that if you're going to make donations, that you send them to the P.O. box address that Marpessa. It's real important. You can't. We can't stop now.
Right.
What we have to do is we have to continue on the legal course. We have to try to support them. I know that one of their biggest needs is housing, and I've been having some discussion with them about that. And they need everything, underwear, clothing. They need jackets. They need donations. You know, Marpessa, one of the things that kind of like just really makes me a little bit weepy is that these children, their children, have waited so long for them to come home. And what it must, I mean, out there in the audience, think about what it would mean if you were gone away from your children, they were helpless about what it is, what was going on. I mean, children simply, they say they understand, but they don't really understand. I keep getting this 623, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm 623.
I'm going to put you on hold.
Okay.
Are you calling into a radio show?
Yes.
But, you know, think about if you're with your children and you have nothing. You have nothing but your spirit. And these women have wonderful, wonderful spirits. Yes,
mm-hmm.
Wonderful spirits, and so you're essentially what I'm afraid of, Marpessa, and it's something that I'm hoping that we'll have a conference call of the gray-haired witnesses this week sometime, is that when all of the celebration is over, that they have a foundation. That they have some idea about how they're going to be housed. They haven't some idea. Gladys has to pay $52 a month for administrative fees for her probationary status. Jamie's probationary status fee has been waived by the state of Florida. Thank God for that. I'm sure their governor hasn't heard about that one. And so we've got to provide. It's not enough to have them coming out of prison. Alpha, I'm going to let you take over for a few minutes, and I'm going to make a call because they may have the wrong telephone number or something. So if you and Marpessa will talk a little bit more about their needs, that would be helpful.
Will do. Thank you. Sister Marpessa, how are you?
I'm fine, sir. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing pretty good. You know, I've been sitting here and I've been listening. And, you know, I just can't fathom the journey you've been on to get this far. And you're really a special person because, you know, I have just engaged a few years back in many of these, in the political arena, in the struggle, if you will, you know, as many of us get up and go to work and get into that rut of self-survival. And at a point of just a depraved indifference to anyone else's needs. And, you know, the journey that I've been on for the last 4 or 5 years, that I've seen, you know, people who take the steps, who invest in, themselves into a situation such as this, you know, there has been a serious miscarriage of justice.
Yes, and it
seems that they are, you know, all too willing to duck and dodge the responsibility of it. And they are simply allowed to do so. You know, the judicial system doesn't have a fidelity to the law. They have a fidelity to the clique. So,
yeah, particularly when it comes to our people, because we are so viewed as subhuman by the system, whether the people that are in charge are, you know, white or black, it doesn't matter. They just see us as discardable, our lives meaningless, nothing, as was proven. If we ever needed a wake-up call, the case of Jamie Scott was definitely that they could see this sister at death's door too many times to count, you know, during last year, and still drag their feet and lie and lie and lie to people, particularly Dr. Gloria Perry, you know, who would sit up there and lie in emails and on phone calls that nothing was wrong with Jamie and that, no, she couldn't get a transplant because she wasn't terminal, you know. And here, you know, any time she could have died, and it's unfathomable that, you know, that they could do things like that and still feel like they can go on business as usual, who knows how many other people are in that prison right now, wasting away, dying. I mean, even when Jane was in there, she talked about walking the halls and the sister dropped dead in front of her. I mean, nobody knows why. Nobody cares. Nobody, you know, gave Jamie her medication for 3 months. You know, it just she just didn't get any.
And that's,
you know, this
and, you know,
is the kind of things that goes on in these prisons. And I want to also say quickly that, you know, what I do is not is basically just put out information. That's what I can do from where I am at. That's what I have always done. You know, as part of the African Frontline Network, is try to disseminate liberation information so that people can get a hold of it and move forward. So what I do would be meaningless if other people didn't pick up the information and take it forward. And that's why when people, just like everybody that's on this call right now, and hopefully people that will listen to the archive, receive information, you know, please forward it, please pass it on. That's the only way we're going to make this media work. You know, we have to have media outside of mainstream media, like Blog Talk Radio, like you know, the different websites, and we got to make sure that people use the information the correct way. Don't just, you know, not open it or not make that call, not send that email. Do it. Please take action when you get action alerts.
Well, sister, you know, these African Americans who were involved, and they are in those posts. As that's the way you deflect the egregious racism that is taking place in that state. You put tokens in places of false and fake authority because they have none.
That's right, in the White House too.
Right, and then you can sit back and you can go, well, this person is an African American. These egregious things couldn't be happening to African American people when they're African Americans who are in charge. Neither
right.
the doctor
and don't
or
don't say it's racism. You can't say it's racism because it's black people. Well, it can still be racism because they're representing a racist power structure.
Well, and that's my whole thing, you know. These black people who they've placed, you know, Epps and the doctor, they don't live in the community. They live outside of the community, and their job would suggest that they are being kept by the, you know, white power structure, and they're kept in that position to deflect or to, you know, stop any outcry of racism. They can always step up. Push them in front of the microphone.
No, that is Dr. Scott, Sister Free, and leave your name and number, and I will hit you back up. May God bless you.
Righty then. So when you get right down to it, what we have is that simple, that same plantation mentality where they would always use one of us to keep us in check.
That's right.
That's
Negro in the field, Negro.
Exactly. And that's what we are seeing here. And at some point in time, you know, I am more on the side of confrontation rather than on the kumbaya, hold their hands and let's all get along. I've, you know, come to the conclusion that this is not just, you know, a battle of ideology. This turns into a war. And this turns into a war because, you know, lives are at stake and people are dying and people's lives are being destroyed. And as
That's
long
right.
as we face that, that is basically the pure definition of war. And that's why we have to fight it.
That's like this war on drugs, which is really a war on people. We know that the vast majority of the people in prison today are in there for nonviolent offenses. Over 2 million people in prison, vast majority for nonviolent drug-related offenses. If only they would stop this war on drugs and take care to make certain that people that need to be in rehab or dealing with an illness deal with that, the tremendous amounts of time that people are doing. It's like, you know, jail is the answer for everything, for child support, for traffic tickets. Throw them in jail, throw them in jail. And there they go to do less than minimum wage labor to, you know, be prevented from taking roles of leadership in our community where we need them to be mothers to their children, you know, to help build real families, real family ties. Imagine these children who are now grown, whose mothers were in prison for 16 years, one of whom was born in prison, you know, and now is, you know, is going to be a mother herself. It makes no sense, and this is happening to far too many people. It's not that many of us that don't know of somebody in prison. When does enough become enough? Don't we realize that we have the power collectively to do, to make the system do whatever it is that we need for it to do? You know?
Well, you know, Marquesa, I'd like to...
You know, the I to be Wells. We learn from the people in the South. Now we're going to have to reteach the people in the South the lessons that they taught to all of us, and that is to make struggle, to make things right. It will happen, but it takes mass numbers of people to join together and make it happen.
It certainly does take numbers of people. But, you know, we live in a world where if you don't see it in the New York Times, I think about the connection between how Haley Barbour responded to the protests about Jamie and Gladys Scott when Bob Hebert wrote his piece in the New York Times.
Mm-hmm.
And I will always be grateful to that brother. But part of the problem was the people who talked to him who knew about the Scott case wasn't talking to him about it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why is that? Why is it that a Jet magazine comes out every week and the case of the Scott sisters was not in Jet magazine? Why?
Well, we were contacting Roland Martin, and time after time, when he would bother to respond,
how many times
did
I call that brother?
I've never heard of the Scott sisters. Well, dang now, we've been telling you about the Scott sisters for 2 years. You know you receive the messages because you keep responding saying you've never heard of them. What's wrong, Roland Martin? You know, what's wrong, Joe Madison, who kept responding to me that he would get back to me, when I'm telling him this woman is dying in prison? How can you not care? But when Bob Herbert said about it, or when the NAACP took interest in it, everybody's tripping over their own feet trying to talk about the Scott sisters. Roland Martin tweeted, "The Scott sisters are released." You better know that I got on that tweet and I let him know just how I felt about him.
Yes. You know, and it was over a two-year period. I mean, when you think about it, the first time that I did a show, Our Common Ground show, with Nancy Lockhart was 4 days after she contacted me. I preempted two shows to be able to talk to her because I was appalled. And when I did that show, I got on the phone and I called everyone in radio and in newspapers that I knew. The only person, the only news organization that responded was the San Francisco Gate. And the San Francisco, the Bayview, I'm sorry. What did I say, the San Francisco Gate?
Yeah.
The Bayview. And they immediately asked me, based on a blog that I had written, would I write an opinion piece about the Scott sisters, which I did. I took and they published. And I took that piece and I sent it out to every black newspaper in this country and still got no response. By the way, I did try to call the number to reach Gladys and Jamie, and the number is busy. And I'm assuming that what has happened and why they're late is that their brother has contacted them, and they're on the phone with them. So if with some time, I think that in a few minutes that they will be with us, because the line was busy. Both lines were busy that I called. So we're going to take a break here at Our Common Ground, and when we come back, we hope that we'll have the Scott sisters with us.
I am happy to join with you today in what will go down in history as the greatest demonstration for freedom in the history of our nation. Five score years ago, a great American in whose symbolic shadow we stand today signed the Emancipation Proclamation. This momentous decree came as the great beacon light of hope to millions of Negro slaves who had been seared in the flames of withering injustice. It came as a joyous daybreak to end the long night of their captivity. But 100 years later, the Negro still is not free, is not free, is not free.
They say if you want a wish to come true, never tell anyone. But there is one wish that can make the difference between life and death. And this wish can only come true if you tell someone. Please let your family know you want to be an organ donor.
I believe in truth.
I believe in truth.
I believe in truth.
I believe in truth.
Truth Works Network.
I'm Janice Graham. Join me on TruthWorks Network, Conversations in Deep Waters.
Hi, I'm Dr. Deborah Napier, and I would love to have you join me on TruthWorks Network here, and I am restoring hope, healing through connection at TruthWorks Network.
This is Alpha. It would be my honor if you would join TruthWorks Network.
Hi, I'm Denise Bowles, and I'd like you to join me on TruthWorks Network.
Live talk programming, TruthWorks Network, premiering February 1st with Dr. Deborah, Denise Bowles, and Alpha. We're working truth Monday through Friday at TruthWorks Network Radio. Come get your truth on.
TruthWorks Network.
And we hope you'll join us at TruthWorks Network with our new live Monday through Friday talk that matters. Sister Marpessa, thank you so much for being with us. One of the things that I do want you to go over again is that we need to respond to the need of the Scott sisters as they face the coming months in regard to housing. You know, one of the things that I have, you know, Marpessa, and also I get real big ideas. I was thinking with all of the work and all of the media that have covered the Scott sisters' release, with all of the organizations that participated in bringing this case to light, I was wondering if we could find 20, okay, this is my big idea, if we could find 20 organizations that would commit to raising $5,000. They live in Pensacola, Florida, which the housing market is very depressed, and it might be a way to help them buy a house. I know that some people are saying, "Has she lost her mind?" But it took big ideas for us to ask a whole nation to come one day to fast for these sisters. So it's not overreaching, I think, to think about that we've got to have good, big ideas to support them as they put their lives back together again. At some point, we've got to think, we've got to wonder why we didn't act 16 years ago.
That's right. That well, you know, we've never been afraid of a big idea, and it ain't nothing to it but to do it. We can ask people, we can ask these organizations, and we can petition, and we can, you know, let them know that these women, you know, are in a home that their mother has kept for all of their children all of these years, and they need a place where they can begin their lives with their children, lives that have been depressed all these years, just like you stated, and, you know, get a clean start at a new life. And I think it's a wonderful suggestion, and we can certainly work on putting something together with people that, you know, would help us do so, that might make it appealing, you know, to organizations, you know, somehow to participate in something like that. I think it's a great idea. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, organizations should want to donate, you know, money.
Well,
to help
we need to start with all of these reporters and all these talking heads who we couldn't get to cover this story 2 years ago. But they covered it ongoing from the day that the announcement of the indefinite suspension up until even now.
Right.
And, you know, and I have to think that a lot of the mainstream media covered this story because it was about Haley Bobber. What do you think, Alpha?
Exactly. Let me say this about.
And I'm going to try to get them again.
Why the mainstream media made the move to even mention it. And, you know, last week I heard over and over again through, you know, as I listened to the radio and the CNN, the top of the hour and the bottom of the hour, they mentioned the release of the sisters. And it is, you know, it was eerie that people.
Your host pin, when finished, press the pound key.
Let me say this. We've got people who are of means. The Roland Martin, the Tavis Smileys, the Oprah Winfreys, all of these people that I've seen mentioned in the chat room and, you know, the tags that have been placed on these people, you know, that is why we remain divided. You can be a one subject or a one sentence, not a sentence, a one subject person and label someone in a bad light. But you see, a lot of these people hang their hats on the popular things, such as the Gina Six. They were all, most of them answered that call.
Right.
And see, if they don't answer every call, then we as a people have to be very, very careful about marginalizing them or drawing this conclusion. You know, Dr. Claude Anderson's foundation lacked money that is tax deductible, and yet rich athletes, the Oprah Winfrey, and, you know, would not, you know, give to his foundation.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we have to be very careful because this has a negative effect on all of us. If the
And I think also in this case as well that if it is if there's numbers of people involved in making a request, then it gets more attention. Just like anything else we're trying to do, I would hate for us to count on them for anything, frankly, because they've proven time and time again that they will turn their back on us, and they will do so, you know, and not give a care in the world, particularly Oprah Winfrey, you know. But I would hope that anything that we could mobilize enough people together to do, that we would recognize that we could do it ourselves. You know, yes, we need to get with the organizations that have the nonprofit and the people that have a lot of money, such as Oprah Winfrey and, you know, the entertainers and whatnot. But we cannot hang our hat on them whatsoever. We know that the power has to come from the people. The people have to recognize and build together our own grassroots organizations around
yeah.
the prisons, period. Not just...
Okay.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
We've got Gladys on the line now. Gladys Scott.
Yes. Yes. How
Thank
you doing?
My dear,
yes.
It is, and Jamie, it's such a wonderful joy to have you on our microphones tonight. Welcome to you and welcome home.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, Jamie's finna call in now. I'm on. Well, she laying there. Jamie, call on yourself. Where your cell phone?
I know she's tired.
Yeah, she is.
Thank you so much
for
calling in so late at night.
That's all right. She was laying down. That's all right. She's going to get up.
Okay, we have Sister Marpessa of Gray-Haired Witnesses for Justice and my co-host Alpho with us, and we just want to extend a big hug and thank you for being such surviving women, such models. I mean, Gladys, I listened to you on TV and on radio and your interviews at your release, and I want to tell you, you are such a gracious woman, and we are so happy to have you home.
And we happy for all what y'all did. You know, if it weren't for the supporters and y'all, you know, running our case on y'all airs, y'all marching for us, y'all sending in letters, you know, faxing letters, you know, if it weren't possible for Nancy and my mother, we wouldn't be here today. And it's just the grace of God that through y'all love and prayers and hard work that we here, we finally can enjoy our kids after 16 years.
I just want you to know that you had the... Hey, how you doing?
It's so good to hear your voice again. God bless y'all. We love you. We love you. We love you.
And we love y'all. We love y'all. It's such a blessing to have people all over the world to love us and to support us. And, you know, if it just wasn't but a letter and a card, you know, it lifts us up every day while we was in there. And I just want to tell y'all thank you because that goes a long way.
That's the truth. Your mama kept every one of us out, too, and we kept on.
Gladys, I wasn't going to say anything, but yes, indeed. She had us stepping right. Gladys, let me ask you a couple of questions that I'm sure people in our audience will ask, and I want to talk about some of the things you've been doing since you've been released, but I also want to talk about how you expect to make this transition. And we've got Jamie, who's just come on. Jamie Scott, welcome home, my dear, and welcome to Our Common Ground.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Hey, Jamie, we love you.
Thank you.
I want to ask both of you, and I have my co-host Alpha with me, and we have a chat room full of people who are sending you a great deal of love and a great deal of joyousness about your homecoming. Tell us what you've been doing since you've been home, how your children are, and what do you see for yourselves in the next couple of months?
Well, right now we just taking everything in, trying to dive back into society, and just enjoying our kids. We enjoyed our kids and our mom and stuff, and we just taking one day at a time because we still even though we out of prison, but we still in prison because, you know, other stipulations are on parole and stuff. We free, but we still on the MDOC.
Mm-hmm.
So we plan on, fighting for a full pardon on April the 1st. And after that, we're going to try to get on with our lives. I'm going back to school. And hopefully after the surgery and stuff, I want to go back to school.
Great. Now, Jamie, Gladys, you told me something that just pulled the heartstrings on Wednesday, one of the days we talked this week, and you said that your daughter, you were in the car with her, and you were just looking at her because you're just such in awe of. Tell us a story about how in awe and how you, what she said to you as you watched her.
You talking about Courtney?
Yes.
I was 4 months pregnant with Courtney, so we really never had a chance to be together but 8 hours, and then I had to go back to prison, and she had to my mom had to come get her, and I was just looking at it, and it was so amazing because she have grew up to a young, beautiful lady. It's we can't believe it. We can't, they can't believe we home, and we can't believe we home. So it's just, I think it's just strange to all of us. It's like
mm-hmm.
a dream.
I'm sure it is. Jamie, since you've been home, what's been your greatest joy around your children?
The way my oldest daughter, she was 7 years old when I left her. And just to see how she is today, she takes me and Gladys everywhere. She's been our chauffeur, and she's so mature, and the way she interacts with her children and stuff, it just brings so much joy to my heart.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you went to prison 16 years ago, what part, other than being young mothers, what part of your life were you in? What was interrupted? I know, Gladys, you were thinking about going to school. Tell us about what was taken from you.
Go ahead, Jane. There was so much taken from me. You know, me being able to see my children grow up, me being able to be prosper in life and things such as that, just being able to live as a human being, so much was taken away from me and taken out of me, you know. It was just horrible. To me, it's a horrible feeling.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think it took a lot of my respect and my dignity, because a lot of people don't know about when you enter MDOC, you have no control over yourself no more. And it's like they tell you when to eat, when to sleep, when to go to the bathroom. You suddenly, scrape out your clothes. You know what I'm saying? Strangers looking at you. So, they took a lot from me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Did you think at trial that you were going to be sentenced?
No, not really. I thought we was going to be found not guilty because due to the fact of the evidence, because me and Jamie did not commit the crime.
And when you were sentenced, your father was living at the time, is that right?
Yes, ma'am.
And so you really had no opportunity to prepare your children and to prepare your family that you might go to prison.
No, ma'am.
Let me ask you about transitioning into prison.
Mm-hmm.
I think that many people in our audience, many people who don't have a lot of interaction with the prison system, might be interested in finding out, because you were so young, were you
mm-hmm.
in an adult prison? You were in an adult prison.
Yes, ma'am.
How did you find your way to have some sense of yourself, to figure out to adjust?
I think mostly, you know, I stayed, well, the first 10 years me and Jamie was together, and then after that they separate us. But after, I had to deal with my surroundings around, you know, where I was. And I tried to take my mind off outside the prison by reading and doing other things like helping folks or working or something like that. Because if I didn't, I knew that my mind would be confined to that prison world. And I probably would have had a nervous breakdown and lost it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Jane, were either of you particularly spiritual as young people?
Oh, yes. Yes,
we
went to church, we prayed,
mm-hmm.
you know, we always believed in God because we were raised up in the church. So, you know, and that's basically what kept us going, you know, reading and going, being active in the churches or programs they had at the prison.
Mm-hmm. What kind of programs did you participate in, Gladys?
Carols, Bible studies, plays, like when they have Christmas plays and stuff like that.
Mhm. Now, when you had those kind of activities, was your family able to attend, or was it just inside the prison?
Just inside the prison.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
When Jamie got ill, were you together?
No.
When she first started, you weren't together. Why were you separated?
Because they didn't want a family member house together.
No.
And then the warden, then the warden act like she had a grudge against Jamie, and so they were doing that to try to hurt us because of the love we had for each other, and they knew the only thing could hurt us is separating us.
Uh huh. Mhm. Mhm. What are the things that you have found striking about how different the world on the outside is in the last 2 weeks?
Technology has changed. Because some of you
did
know.
Did you have computers in prison? Did you have computers in prison?
We have computers, but we don't have internet. We don't have internet service. We don't have cell phones. And like the McDonald's and the restaurants and everything, it has changed over 16 years. And like Walmart's so big, it wasn't like that 16 years ago. It was just a little store. Now it's everything in Walmart.
Jamie, let's talk about your health. How are you doing?
Well, I'm trying to make it. I'm sick now. I caught a cold, and I've been throwing up all day. But other than that, I'm making it.
Well,
I'm not in the best of health, but I'm making
it. I will understand if you have to leave us, because I don't want you to tax yourself, but you've been able to get your dialysis services and start meeting with medical people around your health.
Yes.
And that's it. That's a very good thing. I want to tell you, ladies, Yeah, I just want to tell you, you looked so good on TV.
Thank you.
And I think that over the last week, you have really held your own. There's been a lot of controversy about the terms and conditions of your release.
Mm-hmm.
People are talking, but people have been talking about the Scott sisters for over a month. I was doing a countdown when they announced your release, and I was asking people to count for every day until they did release you. And I was just really so happy. And it's a wonderful thing, because you know what I want to say to you? Dr. Martin Luther King, on his birthday, this is his 82nd birthday, he would have been, he would have loved the spirit in which you are facing all of this. And I know that your voice has been silenced by your continuing outside, I call it an outside incarceration. But you still have people out here who are committed to making this right for you.
Quick, in case she had to go. I wanted to mention to you, sister, that your writing that's present on the website, and also your letter that we read at the Greyhead Witnesses Rally, and everything that you've written that's been published since you were locked down, have been so poignant and meant so much and moved so many people. And I want to encourage you, when you're feeling better and up to it, to please continue to write. And Gladys, too, to please write. We'll publish anything that you write and put it out online and put it on the website, because that is what really has motivated so many people to become involved and will motivate people to continue to be involved and help and make things right for the women that remain behind there in the prison.
We got to learn how to work the internet first.
Mama's been trying to teach us. That's right. when y'all are up to it, we look forward to getting some emails from y'all.
Okay, Mama, she been trying to teach us, so we've been trying to learn. We just learned how to work a cell phone.
All right.
So, Mama, we be watching Mama, and she be trying to teach us, and I be forgetting her password, and I get aggravated, and I just leave the computer. I guess because, you know, I ain't never worked now before, so she told me she's going to be patient with me.
Yes, she will.
And I'll be telling
Jamie, before you go, I'm going to let Jamie go, because I know she's not feeling well.
Yeah,
people
and she done dialysis today, and it wasn't no good day for her.
Oh, yeah. Just a few words about what counsel you would give to young women who are just some words of encouragement to our young people, and what counsel you would give to other women who are coming out of prison, who are in prison, and young women who are headed to prison.
I would tell them, this is Jamie, I would tell them to hold their head up high. Hold their head up high and don't allow anyone to belittle them, no matter what they call them or what they put them. Know that they are beautiful inside and out. And to be careful who they choose as friends, because prisons don't have a certain age. They're sending them out. It was a 13-year-old in prison with us. Prisons do not have a certain age. And I just want them to be careful and realize that anybody talk negative or down to them, they can rise above that. They don't have to be subject to what people say, because people going to always try to put you down before they try to build you up. But you got to know within yourself what you are and stay strong. I tell all my young sisters and brothers to just stay strong. Don't let no one waver you to your right or to your left. You stay focused on the prize. And the prize is to grow up to become productive adults.
Well, thank you very much, my sister. And, Jamie, we will have to have you on to talk more about this whole process, this whole journey that you have been on, and particularly as you get closer and closer to getting the surgery that you require.
Yes.
Thank you. I didn't realize
you.
Today was a dialysis day for you. It's a tough dialysis day is a tough day for everybody who's on dialysis. We love you. We are still here for you. And we will not let you go. We will never let you go.
Thank you so much. And we will
thank
talk
you.
Again.
And you have and okay, Gladys, you stay with us.
Okay.
You're listening to Our Common Ground at Blog Talk Radio. I have Sister Marpessa with me tonight and Alpha with me tonight. And we're going to open up our phones so that you can talk to Gladys Scott. Gladys, you know, one of the things, I have made it my business not to ever say to Scott sisters anymore, to always just say Gladys and Jamie Scott. And then when I write you all's name down, if I have to write it two or three times, I'll say Jamie and Gladys Scott. Then I'll say Gladys and Jamie Scott. Our number is 347-838-9852 at Our Common Ground, and we'll take your calls to talk with Gladys Scott. You women really are some wonderful women. Don't you agree, Alpha? Just a wonderful
absolutely.
Spirit.
You know, I've been listening, and, you know, they have a spirit. They have an underlying spirit that seems to be have an endless supply of enthusiasm at this point. The world has changed. The world is new. And just take your time and take it in, because, I don't think you'll ever lose that enthusiasm. You
mm-hmm.
have so much to make up.
I think the things that I saw in prison and the ladies that I left behind, it makes me stronger each every day to want to fight for them, to get them a better, health care and a better, way of looking at things, because some of them ladies that I left, and they got life without parole, some on death row, and I used to, encourage them, and they wonder why I walked around with a smile on my face. Like I told them, I would never, ever stop giving up hope, no matter how men closed the door, how all my pills got down. But I knew that wasn't going to be my home. And so I kept encouraging and doing what I could for folks. I would cook and I would feed the ladies that didn't have nothing, because I knew God, my blessing was coming.
Your blessing was coming. What a wonderful way to think of it. We're going to go to 734. You're on the air with Gladys Scott, Sister Marpessa, and Alpha at Our Common Ground.
Good evening, everybody. This is Sabora. I'm a Turakman. How's everybody?
Good evening.
Uhuru.
Good evening.
Yes. Peace, Gladys Scott. Now, you're welcome. I came in on the tail end of your story, and I refused at that time to pay attention to what the media was saying. I didn't want to hear anything about no hearsay or anything. I wanted to hear it from the horse's mouth, and who better? I'd like to ask you, can you talk about what happened from the beginning? I know nothing about your case.
Well, right now, I can't go into the facts because I'm still working on a pardon. And so my lawyer advised me not to, but I can tell you this, sister, I'm innocent and I did not commit the crime. And I did not lure no men nowhere. Me and my sister are totally innocent.
I hear you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And
I wish you all well. Thank
you,
my sister, for your call.
God bless you.
With us tonight.
You're welcome. Thank you. And God bless you, too. Thank you. Good night.
All right.
Gladys, I'm going to try to go into our chat room.
Okay.
And people are in here saying they're crying. No crying. This is a joyous celebration because on this microphone tonight is Gladys and Jamie Scott.
Gladys, what would you say is your greatest need right now, you and Jamie? What would you need people to send you the most to contribute to making it easier on you and the family?
Wait a minute, slow down a little bit. I couldn't understand you.
Oh, I'm sorry. What is your greatest need right now? What do you need people to send to help?
Well, our greatest need is, and we need clothes. We need clothes to wear and, like, underclothes and stuff like that.
Okay, clothes. And
yes.
We did have some sizes before that we had gotten earlier. Why don't you go ahead and give the sizes yourself for you and Jamie?
Okay. My size is, Gladys' size is, I wear 16, and I wear extra large in shirts, and I wear in my underclothes I wear size 40D, and in my panties I wear size 8. And Jamie, she wears size 20 wide in pants and a 20 to 22 in shirts, and her underclothes is size 10 and 42D.
Okay.
Let me tell you, Marpessa, what my daughter and her posse did today. They organized a shopping party for Gladys and Jamie. And this is an idea for people who are listening to us. The five of them went shopping today for Gladys and Jamie. They went to lunch, too. And since I told them about that pork chop you were eating the other day, Gladys, they went to a soul food place and had lunch. And then they went out shopping, and each one of them took on a specific. One person was buying hair products and curling irons or whatever, and the other person was buying underwear and pajamas and nightgowns, and the other person was buying some casual stuff, and somebody else was buying dresses. And, and that is, I had tears in my eyes that my daughter would organize something like that for she and her friends. And I'm suggesting to our audience that you do some of that as well. Don't forget, you know, each time you go into a CVS or a Walgreens or into a black to a beauty supply store, make sure it's a black beauty supply store, please. Pick up some things for Gladys and Jamie, and for their children, because one of the people on the shopping party today shopped for the children, some books and pens and all kinds of stuff. So you can do that. And I want you to know that people are still sending messages in our chat room, Gladys, saying welcome home.
Well, I'm going to get on this computer.
You sound wonderful and happy and beautiful.
I am.
Let me ask you, I know, Gladys, it was a particularly hard thing for you to be separated from Jamie while she was sick. I know last year Marpessa and I, when Jamie got sick, Marpessa would send me an email and let me know how things are going because she was talking to your mother, and then we would send out a note for people to call Gloria Perry and Christopher Epps, and I kept saying and call the governor, call everybody on this list to get some help for Jamie. But let's talk about her health issues and how it might have been just more stress for you at the time.
Well, it was mentally draining me because, Jamie had got down where she couldn't bathe herself, and I know how Jamie is, and mentally it almost ran me crazy. I had got to the point where I had stopped eating, and only thing I was doing was thinking about her and stuff, and I was worried about her because, and she was breaking out in sores and stuff, and I knew it was mold, and it was raining in their building, And I just, you know, I had to pray. And when I look at her picture, I will pray every morning for her, and I pray every night. And every time if I can get a word to her through a God or anybody, I'll send it to her. And then I will send her cards through the mail, you know. And I knew I had to be strong for her because I knew that she needed my kidney. And so I had to come back and I had to depend on God. But it was at times I wanted to give up, you know, and stuff. But I knew I had to keep on fighting for her.
Were you able to talk to her?
Like, I got to see her. I might, you know, like if she go to Dallas or something, she might pass through where I work at, and I might get a glimpse of her. Sometimes the officer will stop the van and let me hug and kiss and stuff. It was pretty hard, though, because me and Jamie have always been close, and we have always had a bond. And so, you know, it messed with my mind, but I knew I had to stay strong, and I had people out there fighting and sending me letters and cards, and you know, it never got me through.
Yeah. Well,
that's like some kind of torture. It really is. It's unbelievable. It's unconscionable. It's just infuriating to hear you describe the way they treated y'all. It was no reason for them to separate you in the first place. This country states that it does not torture. And I cannot imagine anyone coming away from this information that you're putting out here tonight still saying or believing such a thing, where they could not even let you embrace your sister knowing that she's on her way to dialysis or even house you together. And we knew at that time, and we're putting out information, that there were relatives that were housed together that had illnesses so that they could look out for one another. But they were so hard-hearted, so evil-intentioned, that they could not let you be with your sister, that they could not give her a break or give you a break. And it states a lot to what y'all are made of, for y'all to still be standing so strong out here and to be able to talk to all these different radio hosts and want to put yourself through this and want to relive it just so that everyone can know for sure that you're out here to fight not only for yourselves but for the women that are still in there. And I really salute you both. You sound like leaders to me, and you definitely got me with y'all and everybody on this call. And we're going to keep on, Gladys. We're not going to let y'all have suffered in vain.
Thank you. Thank you. We really appreciate
Amen to that. Gladys, I know that you've had a long day. We're going to take one more call.
Okay.
And 734, you're on the air. I respect you. You're on the air with Gladys Scott and Sister Marpessa and my co-host, Alpha.
Hi, I didn't press one. I'm just listening. Thank you so much.
Oh, okay. Thank you for being with us. Gladys, let me ask you about what you envision for your future now. After we get past the pardon, after we get past the getting you settled in permanent housing, what do you envision?
Well, what I plan to do is I want to go around to different schools, different colleges, and you know, different conventions, and I want to speak. And right now, me and Jamie, we trying to set up a thing where we can try to be on a speaking tour, where we can go travel and tell our story once she well and stuff and a transplant. That's what our future is. And like I said, and then hopefully one day that I can open up my own youth offender center for youth offenders and stuff, to talk to them and counsel them or help them with their homework, you know, and stuff. You know, just being a second mother to them and leading them in the right way, to not to go down the same road or get falsely accused like me and my sister.
That sounds wonderful, and it sounds like you're already on your way to doing that. Kimba Smith was to join us tonight, and her baby got a terrible, terrible cold and is not sleeping, and they've been having a tough time. She has a brand new baby. But she has asked me to extend to you any resources that she had, because she has had a very successful tour schedule since she's been out of prison. And I will, of course, connect the two of you up.
Okay.
Because all of the places where she has been, I am sure you will be welcomed to tell your story. But I want to tell you, sister, and I can't tell you enough, you got some strong Ida B. Wells blood running through you.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate
it. Any time that you need the services of a microphone, you are certainly welcome at Our Common Ground. Okay, my pastor, this is the part, and Alpha, this is the part where I get kind of weepy. I want you to know that people prayed mightily for you.
Amen.
And I'm hoping that we can somehow get all of the people, Langston Hughes and Sarah Lawrence, all of the people who serviced and spoke for you when you could not speak for yourself.
Amen.
All of the people, I can't tell you, I had to set up a special phone service to take the calls. Remember, Marpessa, when we set up the phone service because people were calling like crazy wanting to know how they could help?
That's right.
And the dust of Mississippi will always be on our shoes.
Amen.
And and to your mother, there's nothing like the love of and faith of a mother.
Yes.
Your mother never stopped. And I want you to know that I am still raging about a number of things that I don't want to burden you about. But we are going to work until justice is done.
Amen.
And I'm asking my audience to continue to write to the governor of Mississippi for him to do right by these two women.
That's
for him to do right and find justice in his heart, and that we continue to work. We continue to write to the White House, because this situation is a prime example
of what
should not be in America.
That's right.
Alpha,
do
you have any?
Did Governor Barber meet with y'all?
No, he never met with her.
Ain't that something?
Did you ever hear what he had to say about your release?
Yes, I heard him on the radio, and then once I was released, I got an order down from him when I walked out of how he sent the order down and stuff. And he said, you know, he said on the radio that Jamie was costing the state too much money, and that really hurted me. But you know, at the same time, I was thankful that he let me go because he didn't have to do it. But it really hurt me
when
he said that.
Well, Gladys, Godspeed on behalf of all of our listeners, all of our chatters, and on behalf of people who believe in justice and believe that there is nothing that any of us can do to give you back what was taken. We can only hold your hand as you try
and
to redeem your life.
That's right.
And I thank you so much for taking the time to spend with us. And I know you're going to come back.
Oh, yeah, most definitely, most definitely. And I'm going to keep y'all updated on everything, you know, from the time, you know, that we go get tested to see if I'm a match. You know, if I'm a match, I'm going to keep y'all updated on our, you know, we'll go in the hospital, our surgery. Hopefully that I can meet y'all and stuff one day. And, y'all going to stay updated because I'm going to learn how to work this computer. I'm going to learn how to work it.
Yeah, I believe you. I definitely believe what you said.
Marpessa and I have this shared fantasy, and the fantasy is that we have dinner with you. What's the name of that restaurant in Jackson where the people, the kitchen, the ladies' kitchen?
Gloria's Kitchen.
Gloria's Kitchen.
Oh, she got some good food. She bought me a plate when I got out. when I was at the hotel, she brought me a plate and a big thing of iced tea. Ooh, she got some good food, some good soul food.
You know, they joined us in Washington.
I know, and she can cook. She brought me some dressing, some homemade macaroni and cheese, some chicken, and she brought me some collard greens. Oh, I mean, she just
for our listeners. For our listeners, Gloria's Kitchen is a small restaurant owned by a sister and her husband in Jackson, Mississippi. And they were the first center of the Free the Scott Sisters campaign right there in Jackson, Mississippi. And that's where we're going to go. Right, my Marpessa?
All right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
She got some delicious food.
I don't know about that, but... Mm-hmm.
Well, I tell you, she got some good food.
Yeah, well.
Y'all gonna enjoy that food.
I guess it's not a shared fantasy, but Gladys, we're gonna go to Jackson and have dinner together at Gloria's Kitchen.
I know
Gladys
ain't
Scott, thank you
going
so much.
No Mississippi ever in life.
Yeah, I would be honored to sit down and eat dinner with y'all and talk. I would be honored.
Well,
we will be the ones to honor, sister. We're going to do it in Florida there.
All right.
And, you know, when things are straightened out here, when justice does prevail, Gladys, there is no reason why that we can't really sit down and talk about all of the implications.
Oh, yeah.
And help you bring closure
in
your life to this.
That's right.
But we welcome you home, my sister. We wish you Godspeed. And
thank you for being
with us.
And I'll
talk to you on Tuesday.
Okay.
Monday is a holiday.
All right.
I'll talk to you on Tuesday.
All right.
Gladys.
And thank you for having me on your show. And tell your daughter I said thank you for everything her and her friends have done. Tell them we are truly grateful.
They'll get it off on Tuesday. They bought the boxes too.
Tell them I'm truly grateful.
I certainly will. I'm sure they're listening tonight.
Okay then. Bye bye.
Thank you, Gladys.
Thank you.
Bye bye. Sister Marpessa, thank you so much for joining us. I couldn't imagine having the Scott, Jamie and Gladys Scott on and welcoming them home without you.
Thank you so very much.
It's
a great show, Sister DJ. And I just love everything about Jamie and Gladys Scott even more than I did before. And I think they're so tremendously, tremendously brave, courageous, strong, committed, and fantastic. And I'm just so glad that I was able to see them get free from that prison. Victories are too few in our movement. And thank God for this one victory, this one time in my lifetime. And I give thanks to everyone that did anything at all to help make it a reality.
And thank you for joining us at Our Common Ground.
Thank you, sister.
We love you so much. And
thank
we thank
we love you,
thank you for your we thank you for your great works, untiring work. We're going to take a break, Alpha, and when we come back, we're going to be going into the second page of Our Common Ground. It is very fitting, Alpha, I think, that it is King's Day that we talk with the Scott sisters, because I think that there is so much about why we celebrate the King's Day that fuels our understanding and fuels our passion to free the Scott sisters. This is Our Common Ground. We'll be right back.
Our hearts tell us something.
They say if you want a wish to come true, never tell anyone. But there is one wish that can make the difference between life and death. And this wish can only come true if you tell someone. Please, let your family know you want to be an organ donor.
I am happy to join with you today in what will go down in history as the greatest demonstration for freedom in the history of our nation. A great American in whose symbolic shadow we stand today signed the Emancipation Proclamation. This momentous decree came as the great beacon light of hope to millions of Negro slaves who had been seared in the flames of withering injustice. It came as a joyous daybreak to end the long night of their captivity. But 100 years later, the Negro still is not free, is not free, is not free.
Just totally blessed. We totally blessed. It's been a long, hard road, but we made it. It was times when we want to give up. But I told my sister, I said, we're going to make it. We're coming up out of here. We're not going to die. I said, man gave us 2014, but God said, no, you coming. And today is the 7th of 2011. And me and my sister is here.
Yeah.
And I praise God for it.
I kept the faith. I used to tell the girls in prison, all our pills is gone. I don't know how God gonna do it, but I do know God will show up and he will show out.
He
show up and show out. Because I never thought this day would come when I would be on the outside of the wall. When I've been so bound on the inside of the wall.
I'm not. No.
We couldn't have made it in that prison being bitter. You know, we couldn't have did it. It wouldn't have worked. We would have came out looking horrible. And being bitter is not the answer to anything. And like I say, we don't hold grudges against anyone. They have to pay for their action in placing me and my sister in prison for a crime we did not commit.
Years, two double life sentences. Jamie and Gladys Scott are safely home with their mother, with their children. You're listening to Our Common Ground at Blog Talk Radio. Thank you for being with us here at Our Common Ground. With a joyous heart and a spirit of gratefulness, tonight we celebrate the homecoming of Jamie and Gladys Scott, and we celebrate the birthday of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. Stay tuned. I'm Janice Grant. We'll take your calls at 347-838-9852, and I'll be listening for you. Talk that matters. It's our common ground. Alpha's on board, and we will have joining us one of the founders of the Gray Haired Witnesses for Justice.
And thank you for staying with us here at Our Common Ground. I'm Janice Graham, and my co-host, Alpha, is here with us, and we're moving into our second page of tonight's show, where we're going to be blending the celebration of the King Day. And, a lot of people might not make the connection, but let's make the connection for you. There is not very much between Alpha celebrating the homecoming of the Scott sisters and celebrating the legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King on his birthday. Do you get the dots, Alpha?
Yep, I get the dots.
You get the dots. Okay. Let's see if we can get some dots up in here. Our number is 347-838-9852. What do you do on King's Day? And, Alpha, it's really funny because people run around in my office and they're saying, yeah, it's not a day off. It's not a day off. It's a day on. But what do we really do? On King's Day. On my King's Day, I am dedicating King's Day to Jamie and Gladys Scott. It'll be my day to plan to do whatever I need to do to support them in their release. We can't even call it freedom. See there? They just take everything away from us, Alpha. We can't even call it freedom. Alpha, are you still there? Something has happened. Alpha, are you there? Alpha, I think I lost Alpha for a minute. Please don't let me lose Alpha. Alpha, are you there?
I'm here.
Alpha,
can you
are you
hear
there? Yes, Anna? I got you now.
Okay.
Something went blackly wrong on the switchboard.
Janice, let me say this.
People.
I think there needs to be, can you explain to people, even Gladys made mention of a pardon, and could you tell people how different a pardon is as opposed to a commuted sentence, as opposed to an indefinite suspension, which is what they are under?
Okay, people are telling me in the chat room that somehow my voice broke up. Is my voice back? And they're saying I'm choppy.
Yes, it is. It is bubbly and choppy. So I don't know if it's the phone that you're using, but that's what happened to me. I went to switch phones because the battery in the phone and that unit was running down, and when I switched over, it disconnected.
Really? Okay, let me see if I can.
That well may be what the problem is.
Let me see if I can't refresh and make it better. Because
no,
I'm looking
it would
at,
be. Are you on your headset?
Yep.
Okay, then I don't know. I don't know.
Am I still? Before we go into this segment, I need to know. I'm being told that it only happened after the break. So let's see. How am I now?
Nothing has changed.
Don't leave.
Nothing has changed. Nothing has changed.
I'm still breaking up. Alpha, are you telling me I'm still breaking up?
You're still breaking up.
Okay. I think what I'm going to have to do, you're going to have to take over, Alpha, and I'm going to have to hang up and call back.
Okay. All right.
Go,
well,
Alpha.
Okay. Look, I think there is confusion when it comes to the difference in a pardon and a difference in a commuted sentence. The pardon phase. And when people are pardoned, as Janice explained it to me, that means you have to admit your guilt. And that's problematic here when it comes to Gladys and Jamie. Whereas a commuted sentence seems to hinge upon the state or, you know, admitting that they were wrong. So those are different. Those are seem to be the differences as it was explained to me by Janice holding that position that she does. I would think that she knows a lot better than I do as to what the ins and outs would be. But there seems to be a, you know, there's a difference between a pardon and a commuted sentence.
Well, am I okay now, Alpha?
You're a lot better. You're a lot better.
Okay. I think that one of the things that, as a nation, as people who honor citizenship, that we have to think about is that when a person is pardoned, it means that they must admit to the crime. When a person's sentence is commuted, it means they will have a record, but they have never admitted guilt. And one of the things is that we have to understand is that when you are a convicted felon, there are many privileges as a citizen you do not have and will not have. And all of these things are final. If the governor should commute or pardon the Jamie and Gladys Scott tomorrow, they will never be able to vote. Unless we change that. And I see Afia is in the chat room, and one of the reasons why we must support the U.S. Human Rights Network on the issue of political prisoners in this country is because there are certain inalienable rights that once you pay whatever you have to pay your due, there are some things that should be restored. I cannot tell you on this King's Day that we had better get with it in terms of how we commit our lives to struggle. Sister Marpessa, I love it when she talks about struggle. She talks about struggle in such a very eloquent and creative way. Struggle must become a part of our lives. If it does not become a part of our lives, Alpha, if you just on this King's Day look at how many black people are in prison, if you just look at that and understand the import of millions of people. Millions of people whose lives are incomplete as citizens because of the public policy. We've got to get real about what public policy, so many of you go to church, all right? You go to church. And there are principles as Christians or Buddhists or Baptists or whatever, Unitarians, whatever you are, Muslims, whatever you are, you abide by your principles. And one of the things we're not grasping is that we abide by law in this country, but we don't take the time to analyze the law by which we abide. And question it. I mean, truly question it in terms of do I abide? And that's what I think that we have to concentrate on. When we say we love Malcolm, when we say we respect Garvey, when we say we read the words of W.E.B. Du Bois and Amos Wilson and Dr. Clark and Dr. Hillard, when we say those things, when we stand up and applaud Dr. Naeem Akbar or Hakeem Adabudi, what are we really doing? How do we make real the principles by which we say we abide? And many times that means in this country, in America with two Ks, it means that we're going to have to question law. I didn't say break law. I said question law. And that's what we need to be, that's what I'm suggesting we need to be talking about on King's Day. And today is January 15th, 2011. 347-838-9852. If you'd like to talk about the Scott Sisters or talk about the Scott Sisters case, or if you would like to talk about, I enjoy talking about, as a child, watching Reverend Martin Luther King. Alpho.
Yes. Janice.
When you were a kid, when you were growing up, and Martin Luther King, there was this man named Reverend Martin Luther King, and he was doing brave things. I just knew that my life had to be like his. I didn't want to be his wife. I didn't want to be his children. Oh, yeah, I did kind of want to be his children. But I just knew that my life had to be that. What about you?
Well, Janice, as I was coming up, that was one of the things that was the furthest from my mind. I thought he lived, and I didn't understand. But you do recall, and I know you recall, that back then, Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, he wasn't accepted, not even by his own. Here in Chicago, he walked through the segregated neighborhoods to hatred, to bigots.
Oh, I remember when he was in Washington Park.
Yes, exactly. And not just from, you know, the whites here, the bigoted whites here in Chicago, but you had black ministers who were against him. He was against the war. And you had black ministers who was torn that party line of, he was a traitor. He was, He was this, he was that. You know, all of the great men of today were vilified as they made that journey to where they are now. Muhammad Ali, the same way. You had people, they hated Muhammad Ali simply because he was black. Just like they hated Martin simply because he was black. So, you know, back then it was a scenario where I thought he lived a dangerous life. And at my youth, I was confused as to whether he was right or whether he was wrong. And how does the song go? Only time will tell if I'm right or I'm wrong. And that's the way it goes.
You're quoting hymns nowadays, huh?
Well, I always
but
do.
But you're right. I think that out of shame, out of confusion between, I mean, you have to realize that in the 60s, white people were telling us if we talked about race, that was ignorant talk. Even good white people.
Yeah,
is this like the progressives? Is this like the progressives now who are telling us that what our agenda ought to be?
Exactly. Exactly. And we always get caught up into this scenario where, like, we have to ask them to be us. We have to ask them to complain about how they are treating us. And that, I mean, how long will we
I mean,
do?
That's one of the traps our president walks into all the time.
Well, he walks into that path because he is afraid of what they'll say about him. They're going to criticize him, and what he doesn't realize is that he is just this piñata that they batter and bash back and forth. You know, and not to get off into the politics of it, but if he could only realize that either he's going to stand or he's going to wither. And how did it say you can either sit or you can stand, but don't wobble? And it's true. You have to either stand for something. You have to either, you can't allow yourself to be framed in a certain narrative and just capitulate and compromise and appease. And that's what we're finding out here because he wants to so much get along when it's time to stand up and fight.
Well, you see, the part of it that we haven't gotten over, and I don't care how many dashikis you wear, I don't care how many afros and natural hairdos you wear, I don't care how many trips you take to Ghana. If you are still steeped in the shame that was plastered on our lives, if you can't break through that cast of plaster, you'll fall into that trap. It is the same in the 60s as it is today. You know, if we're not talking the talking points that are supposed to be of the intelligence and of the this and of the that, then somehow we're off the mark. We don't get it. We do get it. Don't we, India Declare, in the house? We do get it. Navaksar, we get it. It is that we have to resist being taken off the mark. And I think that one of the things that happened to Dr. King and that has happened to every one of our leaders that have been either gunned down or put down, you know, we still have some old leadership that's been put down. You heard from Maxine Waters since they were going to investigate her husband or her about her husband? Asking you a question.
I've seen her out. I've seen her not as frequently as she has been, but you know, in Maxine Waters' case, I believe that this is kind of like the if I can use the term, the Mexican standoff. They have nothing. But as politicians walk on eggshells.
There is no such thing as they have nothing. These people will make up stuff.
But that's my whole point. They
made up stuff. They're making up stuff. They're cooking the books so Tom DeLay doesn't have to go to prison.
Of course.
That's how it works. And one of the things that I loved about Dr. King is as much stuff as they made up, it was like they were throwing eggs at him and he kept walking with the yolk and the white hanging off the tip of his nose. That's a real leader. He didn't let anyone take him off the mark. And we allow ourselves to be taken off the mark. There is no reason whatsoever that given the political landscape for Haley Barbour, that he would have dared to come down with this draconian release of Gladys and Jamie Scott. He would have feared it in 1967. There's no uprising going on in Mississippi tonight. And I just think that we have to make sure that Malcolm and Dr. King are that who they were really. You know, for all of you who are listening, tomorrow go to YouTube and listen to his speech on Vietnam at Riverside Church in 1967. That's the real deal. The real deal is not I got snookered by a mealy-mouthed fat bastard governor in Mississippi. You know, as every time I see the word Scott, Nina Simone starts singing in my head, God damn Mississippi. Mississippi has took Medgar Evers. And the same thing that they're doing to probably, you know, we still have Thalia Law in prison in Mississippi. Am I right? I saw Della Proja in here. I believe she's in a prison in Mississippi. Did you hear Gladys say that when she was in prison, there was a 13-year-old in the prison with the grown women?
Yeah, I did hear her say that.
Did you hear Jamie talk about how she got sick? You know, nobody's asking the question. Here's my Martin Luther King question of the night. If Jamie Scott went into the prison in Pearl, Mississippi, 16 years ago, healthy, how did she get sick? And her dialysis was threatened by the unsanitary, unsafe, unhealthy conditions in the prison, and she had to stay there. That's a political prisoner. Am I right, Ifia? The same phone that seems to be cracking up tonight. You know, that's why I can't stand Black Talk Radio. Y'all gonna have to raise some money for me to be on a real radio because I wasn't supposed to be getting off the air to go call people and all that. In the terrestrial radio, Alpha, they have people in the background doing all of that, making sure the guests are on the line, blah, blah, blah. But we'll do what we have.
Well, I got people. I got people to do that.
You got people?
Yeah, you.
Well, the I love you. I love you. Dom, what you going to do with him? You can't do a thing with him. House, y'all come and do something with him. India, I'm going to have to give him back. But Alpha, what I'm saying is, I hate to use this, it's an old worn-out term, but when you think about it, we got to get real. I want to share something with you that I put together later on, but we're going to take Afia Wangaza is on the line. Sister Afia, happy King Day and welcome to Our Common Ground. I respect you.
I respect you too, sister. Happy King Day to you, Alpha, and all the listeners, and I applaud you all for the magnificent work that you did around the King sisters, the Scott sisters.
Thank you, sister.
It's a real...
How are you this evening?
Good, good. And yourself?
I'm hanging in here.
Happy New Year to you all.
Happy New Year.
Thank
to you.
It's a real, despite the qualifications and the limitations of it all, it's a real people's victory because, as you can see from the qualified release, if folk hadn't gotten mobilized, it would never have happened. So we need to claim whatever victories that we have and use that momentum to keep us moving forward, which is a part of the beauty of the prior phase of the modern day human rights movement in this country, which we commonly call the civil rights movement. But the fact of the matter is we've been engaged in a human rights movement ever since they snatched the first African off the continent and slammed us down in North America. Not counting.
All right, now.
We were here before they got here. So I really want to applaud you all for the work that you've done and the consciousness that you constantly raise. Sometimes you be raising points so complex and so quickly, it's difficult to respond to them. It's easier when you hide out in the chat room, you know, so you don't have to keep up with you and Alpha. But I wanted to point out a couple of things. One, with regard to pardons and commutations and the fact that we think that people are voting rights are civilly dead in all jurisdictions, all states, when they have felonies. And actually, that's not true. In predominantly
in
white
states, yeah.
That it's only the person is only forbidden to consigned to lifetime disenfranchisement if their conviction is based on a voting
violation.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But in other instances like Vermont, New Hampshire, people vote while they're still in jail. And the truth
of
the matter.
Well, it's interesting that you point out there are predominantly white states.
Exactly. Exactly. Which was bringing me back to my second point is when you look at the most draconian conditions, whether they're the conditions of confinement or the conditions of liberty. And that was another point that I wanted to address about you pointed out that they were released as opposed to being freed. We have to understand the fact that none of us are free. We simply have varying degrees of liberty. Freedom is a much bigger concept, much bigger space than simply being able to get up and go when, if and when you decide that you want to or whether you are or are not going to participate to some limited degree in this system. Because the truth of the matter, of course, is that we all participate in the system at some level or another. There's a book that's called Slavery by Any Other Name that talks about the Holocaust of enslavement through World War II, and the fact that in this country, the objective has always been to exclude us from the political system, to disenfranchise us, and to benefit from our labor. And we have just experienced the various mutations of that objective. I take exception to the use of the term of the new Jim Crow and say, when did the old Jim Crow die? Because from the inception of this country, and especially the establishment of chattel enslavement, the object has always been to politically exclude us and to benefit from our labor. And there was one major shift before and after the Civil War. That is that the process of enslavement shifted from private hands to public hands with the convict leasing and the prison industrial complex. We have got to read and to put what is going on in phenomenological terms and into historical context, and began to challenge the system in a strategic and systematic way. I wanted to add to the speeches that you were referencing. There's a Martin Luther King speech that was that he did at Stanford University just before or as he was beginning to organize for the Poor People's Campaign. And he talked about the two Americas that Barack Obama denies exist. And the America that benefits the wealthy and powerful, as opposed to the non-wealthy and powerful, that I would urge people to Google and to listen to as well on Monday. I just want to applaud you,
this?
Martin Luther King, at Stanford University.
At Stanford. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And to add to the point that you were making, Alpha, about how King was not accepted at the time of his death, I was trying, somebody had the statistics on it as to the percentage of Black people who supported King at the time of his death, less than 50%. And I would point out that the progressive Baptist Convention was, formed because the National Black Baptist Convention or Conference, whatever they call themselves, had
convention.
National Black Baptist Convention refused to support the Civil Rights Movement, and so it was the Progressive Baptist Convention that was formed for the purpose of organizing Black Baptist churches, Black churches generally, especially Baptist churches, in support of the Civil Rights Movement, SCLC, and other organizations. So it's, and at this point, we don't even know what our history is. We don't really even know what King was about, because he has been so packaged and sanitized and merchandised. We never even hear the complete speech of the March on Washington, which was to going to the Capitol to collect on a bad check. And the fact that the United States has never, had not then and does not today, live up to, as Barack Obama put it the other night, the expectations of our children, which have been sold a mythological bill of goods. So I'm so full, frankly, as we talk and as I listen to you, you all this evening, and the Scott sisters who are so terribly, terribly strong and inspiring. It's just, and I'm definitely wanting them to get on the road and start calling the name of political prisoners, because we owe the political prisoners a debt that we could never pay. If we got them out in the morning, we'd still be indebted to them for the rest of our and their lives. So
Amen.
You got to start making those connections and understanding that when we're talking about the legal system in this country, we're not talking about justice. When we're talking about the prison system, we're not talking about rehabilitation. We're talking about the use of military force against a civilian population for the purpose of maintaining the status quo established at the time of the writing of the U.S. Constitution, which established at its primal purpose in the commercial document that it is, not a human rights document, commercial document, to protect and promote the commercial interests of white male property owners. So
that's right. That is our purpose, folks. You
that's
heard
right.
it here. Be
so,
real clear about what it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we think we got jobs that you know, that somehow take us away from that. We don't. We do not. You know, so, you know, and Stanford University, and I want to underscore, I'm going to post a link. Stanford University has an extensive research and education institute, King Institute, and they own a number of documents that you will find nowhere else, and there's an audio archive there, and I'm posting it in our chat room because you can find that speech on this site that I'm posting in our chat room, and the URL for people who are listening, if you Google the Martin Luther King Jr. Research and Education Institute, you will find of the Stanford speech there. Afia, thank you so very much, and you owe us a show, you know.
Anytime. I'll be emailing you shortly, because we at the Southern Human Rights Organizers Conference over Human Rights Weekend, December 10th weekend, passed a resolution to send Barack Obama an open letter demanding that he apply to the United States the same standard that he was challenging the Chinese government to release its political prisoner to go and receive the Nobel Peace Prize, that he apply that same standard to the political prisoners that he, as head of the United States government, is holding in captivity. So
all
as
right
soon as
now.
We get that completed, we're going to be shooting that to you, and we're going to be following up, because we want, we'll do a whole campaign with telephone calls, faxes, emails, and petitions. So it'll be my honor to come back. Thank you.
Okay.
You will,
thank
you.
And
thank
we'll
you.
Get a report. Political prisoners, your political prisoners presentation to the UN.
Wonderful.
Thank you, Afia.
Thank you.
You have a wonderful King Day, and it's a day on and not a day off.
Not a day off.
Take care, Afia.
That was our sister, Afia Gawanza, and we've got 432 on the air, on the line. You're on the air. I respect you at our common ground.
I really appreciate your program. This is Black Ice in Texas, and thank you so much, Ms. Janice Graham and Brother Alfo and Sister Marpessa. And congratulations to the Scott sisters, and all the best, and whatever we can do to be of any assistance, please let us know. I don't know if can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, ma'am.
And, and welcome. Thank you for joining
well,
us,
thank
Black
you. No,
Eyes.
No problem.
Tonight.
I didn't know if you could hear me, but you know, may I read just this one thing? And have y'all heard the term that there are people that would argue with a signpost? y'all have heard
yes.
that term before.
My mother used to tell me that.
Let me read.
She used to tell me that I would argue with the signpost. Go ahead.
No, not you. But I'm telling you, this is the reason. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. You see, those words didn't have any qualifiers in them. There was nothing in there about all white men. There was nothing in there about some slaves. All men. The only determination I understand there is to be made is when you differentiate between, you know, a man and a woman, gender. And generally, to my idea, you come to that conclusion based on anatomical structure, the anatomy. So what I'm saying is, although I hope that we all have a point of convergence, whether we disagree with the NAACP, whether we disagree with Obama and what the President Obama was doing, this is the first person of African descent president that I've ever heard of in my lifetime, and I'm 59 years old. And, you know, there have been 43 previous presidencies prior to this guy. And, I mean, it's a load for this guy to turn around everything, especially if he doesn't have a consistent, committed, and determined constituent base. So I really, really hope that and when you talk about Mississippi.
You hope what?
I'm sorry. What I hope is that we all find a point of convergence rather than divergence, where we all find a point that we can come together and develop a synergistic, consistent, and committed force. And these incidents won't just be events, but they'll be movements. The intellect displayed just in this time that I've been listening to your show, for us as people of African descent, is phenomenal. I've heard people, you know, say to me in these different chat rooms, well, you know, Martin Luther King was all about civil rights. And these are Anglos, Europeans, whatever. And I say to them, which one of your civil rights do you not want? I say, you should be more than anyone else fighting for civil rights, because civil rights isn't determined by the color. You know, it's not about, you know, people say it's race. It's not a thing about race. This is all about color. Human is a race. And these people somehow always synonymously have the ability to use semantics to exchange, to interchange race and color. There's a total difference between race and color. And I just really hope, and I'm just so grateful and proud, honored, and supremely delighted to have had the opportunity to listen to you tonight. This is the first time that I've gotten a chance to listen to your show, Ms. Graham. And I've listened to Alpho before. He and I have conversed on several different occasions. So may I say that I encourage you to continue, and I will be more consistent as a listener. And I really so much appreciate you, your chat room, and your listenership out there, and the information that you provide, and it's necessary. We need an echo chamber of African descent. Why is it when you look at TV on Sunday, tomorrow, you'll see five different people, one a commentator and four different Anglos providing their insight or their opinion of what our thoughts are? We can represent ourselves very well. And, you know, I was listening. There was something that I had to tie Tom DeLay in with, and I can't remember what it was. But, you know, I look at this guy, Tom DeLay. He's from Texas, same place Sam Gohmert, Louis Gohmert, that wants to allow Congress to carry weapons on the floor of Congress. And, you know, it's amazing and really strange and eerie that this event that occurred last week, where the lady was shot and the little girl was senselessly murdered, is so close to the celebration of Martin Luther King's birthday. And also in combination with the release of the Scott sisters. And so I just hope and pray that their situation will be executed to put them in the best possible position. But we're years behind the infrastructure that these people have established. And at least we have a kernel right now. We have a seed that can be incubated, that can be cultivated, nourished. You know, that's growing from sprout into something that could be beneficial, not just for us as a culture, but to make the realization of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and all other documents related to the United States government a reality. You know, civil rights isn't a black thing. Civil rights is a human American citizen thing. So I don't know, maybe I'm saying too much, but anyway, I just wanted to tell you, acknowledge that I appreciate you. Thank you so much for allowing me here.
Well, Black Ice, we respect you, and thank you for joining us tonight, and we certainly hope that you'll join us every Saturday night. We're here 10 to 1. And we often do specials, so for all of you who are listening and in our chat room, please sign up to get our newsletter.
Thank
and
you.
You're coming, Black Ice, you're coming at the end of my career. I've been broadcasting since 1985, before there was free long distance.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much for joining us. We're going to go to 734. You're on the air. I respect you. Thank you for joining us at Our Common Ground. Our number is 347-838-9852. We'll take your call. 734.
Good evening. I'm just listening. I'm enjoying the show.
Oh,
thank you.
I see. I keep forgetting.
That's
one of the reasons I have Alpha here with me is he keeps me on my toes. But what?
Nothing.
Okay. I do want to share this with you before we take other calls. I think it is important for us to share with the world who the real Martin Luther King was. And I think it's very important for us to teach the lessons. Love of my life's fraternity had a King teach-in for elementary school kids at one of the local schools here in Boston today. I was so very proud as he practiced what he was going to say. It's King Day.
I am happy to join with you today in what will go down in history as the greatest demonstration of freedom in the history of our nation. Five score years ago, a great American in whose symbolic shadow we stand today signed the Emancipation Proclamation. This momentous decree came as the great beacon light of hope to millions of Negro slaves who had been seared in the flames of withering injustice. It came as a joyous daybreak to end the long night of their captivity. But 100 years later, the Negro still is not free. 100 years later, the life of the Negro is still sadly crippled by the manacles of segregation and the chains of discrimination. 100 years later, the Negro lives on a lonely island of poverty in the midst of a vast prosperity. 100 years later, the Negro is still languishing in the corners of American society.
finds himself in exile in his own land. So we've come here today to dramatize the shameful condition. In a sense, we've come to our nation's capital to catch a check. When the architects of our republic wrote the magnificent words of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, they were signing a promissory note to which every American felt the fall out. This note was a promise that all men, yes, black men as well as white men, would be guaranteed the inalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It is obvious today that America has defaulted on this promissory note insofar as our citizens of color are concerned. Instead of honoring this sacred obligation, America has given the Negro people a bad check, a check which has come back marked insufficient funds. But we refuse to believe that the Bank of Justice is bankrupt. We refuse that are insufficient funds in the great cause of opportunity of this nation. So we've come to cash this check, a check that will give us the funds demand, the riches of freedom, and the security of justice. This is no time to engage in the luxury of cooling off or to take the tranquilizing drug of gradualism. Now is the time to make real promises for tomorrow. Now is the time to rise from the dark and desolate valley of segregation against slumbering past. Justice a reality for all the lost children. It would be fatal for the nation to overlook the urgency of the moment. This sweltering summer of the Negro's legitimate discontent will not pass until that is an invigorating autumn of freedom and equality. 1963 is not an end, but a beginning. Those who hope that the Negro needed to blow off steam and will now be content will have a rude awakening if the nation returns to business as usual. There will be neither rest nor tranquility in America till the Negro is present. That is something that I must say to my people who stands on the warm threshold which leads into the palace of justice. In the process of gaining our rightful place, we must not be guilty of wrongs and deeds. Let us not seek to satisfy our thirst for freedom by drinking from the cup of bitterness and hatred. We must forever conduct our struggle on the high.
degenerate into physical power. Gain of a gain. We must rise to the destined height of meeting physical force with soul force. The marvel of our new militant, which has disrupted the negro community, must not lead us to great distrust of all whites. For many of our white brothers, as evidenced by their presence here today, have come to realize that their destiny is not. They have come to realize that their freedom is inextricably bound to our freedom. We cannot walk alone. And as we walk, we must make the pledge that we shall always march ahead. We cannot turn back. There are those who ask us to never see the civil rights. When will you be satisfied? We can never be satisfied as long as the Negro is the best victim of the unspeakable horrors of police brutality. We can never be satisfied. As long as our bodies heavy with the fatigue of travel cannot gain lodging in the motels of the highways and the hotels of the city. We cannot be satisfied as long as the Negro's basic mobility is from a smaller ghetto to a larger one. We can never be satisfied as long as our current stripped of that selfhood and robbed of that dignity by sighing things for white folks. We cannot be satisfied as long as the Negro in Mississippi cannot vote and the Negro in New York believes he has nothing for which to vote.
Our common ground is honored to join our nation in the celebration of the birthday of Reverend Martin Luther King.
And so we must. We must tell our children. We must tell our friends. Alpho, it is so hard to believe that Dr. King would be 82 today.
Well, Janice, I think it's even harder to believe that at such a young age, from the time of his death, when he was 39, I think that should be the blueprint that it's going to take the youth. It's going to take the fearless youth to seize upon the opportunity, seize upon the freedoms that they have basically inherited from the work of this great man. And just as he put his life on the line, just as he stuck his neck out, and our youth, that's where the fight is going to come from. Right now, the legacy is being kept alive by those of us who are having our hair change color.
Yep.
And if we are going to
emerge
from this situation, we have to get this message, we have to instill this message into our youth that they must carry this torch. We have this torch. We are offering this torch. Now someone has to grab it and continue to run with it.
You're right. You're right. And that brings me to telling all of you that next week at Our Common Ground, we'll be hosting a full show with Kevin Gray, who is a long-term activist from South Carolina. He has a lot to say. He has a lot of history. Has a lot of accomplishments. But more than that, he has a standard and a principle of how we should be operating in our consciousness about what things are important and political strategy. And I'm real pleased that Kevin, once again, is going to be with us next Saturday right here at Our Common Ground at 10 p.m. We also want to remind you that on February 1st, we are going live at TruthWorks Network with live programming. We have only been featuring audio documentary and rebroadcasts of important conversations about Black America at TruthWorks, and on February 1st, Dr. Deborah Napier is going to be premiering on her show, A Heart for My People. And on February 3rd, Denise Bowles is going on with the Denise Bowles Show. Those shows will air at 8 o'clock. And on that Saturday, the first Saturday in February, Alpho will be bringing his The Alpho Show for 2 hours every Saturday, 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time, to TruthWorks. And on Friday nights, I will be doing the second Friday night in February, I will be bringing a new show to the airwaves, Conversations in Deep Water. It's at Blog Talk Radio, blogtalkradio.com/TruthWorks. Same place that Alpha is doing the Mo Alpha show, where he reloads right after his show on Blog Talk Radio. So it's TruthWorks Network Radio at Blog Talk Radio. And we're really pleased. My first guest will be Dr. David Icard. He is a Black feminist, and we're going to be talking about some of the issues that face Black feminism and Black men who choose to be Black feminists. We're going to have to get out of here, and we thank you so much. We are especially grateful for your phone calls, that you are here, that you are listening, and we are especially grateful on behalf of a Black nation, to Dr. Martin Luther King and who he stood for and about, and what he stood about. And we are very, very joyful and very, very grateful for having had the company of Gladys and Jamie Scott. Alpha, thank you once again for being with me, for holding up on the other end.
And we want to tell you that we will continue to bring broadcasts of Talk That Matters. Thank you for your calls. Have a great King weekend. And we'll see you right back here. Don't forget the India Declare Show, 11 a.m. Monday through Friday. That's Eastern Time. And the Voxar goes on the air at 6 p.m. Eastern Time right here with Let's Talk on Blog Talk Radio. I'm Janice Graham. And as always, I'll be listening for you.
We just totally blessed. We totally blessed. Yeah. It's been a long, hard road, but we made it. Yeah. It was times when we want to give up.
It's okay now.
But I told my sister, I said, we're going to make it. We coming up out of here. We not going to die.
Right.
I said, man gave us 2014, but God said, no, you coming. And today is the 7th of 2011. And me and my sister is here.
Yes. Yes.
And I praise God for
yes.
it.
I kept the faith. I used to tell the girls in prison, all our pills is gone. I don't know how God gonna do it, but I do know God will show up and he will show out.
Yes. Yes.
And he
yes.
show up and show out. Because I never thought this day would come when I would be on the outside of the wall. When I've been so bound on the inside of the wall.
We declare our reign on this earth to be a man, to be a human being, to be respected as a human being, to be given the rights of a human being in this society, on this earth, in this day, which we intend to bring into existence by any means necessary.
I want young men and young women who are not alive today, but who will come into this world with new privileges and new opportunities. I want them to know and see that these new privileges and opportunities did not come without somebody suffering and sacrificing for them.
You've been listening to Our Common Ground at Blog Talk Radio. I'm Janice Graham. Thank you for being with us. These are our stories. This is our mission. This is our challenge. We thank you for your calls and your input. We hope you'll join us each Saturday night here at Our Common Ground.
Ever since, it's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. It's been too hard living, but I'm afraid to die.
Our Common Ground, speaking truth to power and ourselves. This is Alternative Activist Empowerment Talk Radio.
A long